Anyhow, I'm really happy to be here, and I'm excited about what God has for us today and what God's just doing in our lives here at the chapel. So we have had a great week and a lot of good things. I'm excited about this whole thing on the Sermon on the Mount. We finished chapter 5, so that's like a big woohoo. So we only have two more chapters to go, which is like one of those things where I thought when I started, this looks like the 3 chapters, 3 weeks. Oh, wait, there's just so much here, I can't really cover this. Well, let's cut it down. So it's going to take all summer, probably part of the fall. We'll see how it moves, but we're excited about that. Theme has been a recipe for happiness, so I've got to have little recipes. This one, I picked out this recipe, which for seems like apparently no reason, but there will be a reason at the end. So we'll just watch the little tasty recipe. Here we go. Oops, I think I did it one more time. There we go. Ba-boom. There. No, that was too many times. Okay, come on. Maybe two people hit it at once. Let's try this. Is that a video? You know what? Go to the next slide. There we go. See, now mushrooms are one of those things. You either like them or you don't. I've met very few people who go, yeah, mushrooms, I take them or leave them. Either you love them, and I'm kind of in that group, or, oh, mushrooms, I hate those things. And mushrooms are a type of, they're kind of its own little organism. They're kind of called fungus, multiple or fungi. And we'll talk about that in a minute, but I just kind of keep mushrooms in your mind. And then we're going to go over here to the text, which is about our recipe for happiness. Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them. For then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. And that's chapter 6, verse 1. Now, a lot of times, if we think about this versus some of the things that he's previously said, some people are like, well, how does this work? And a lot of the things that Jesus said were, on the one hand, so simple, so straightforward. On the other hand, a bit confusing. And it took a minute. And, well, is this contradicting that? Because didn't he just say in chapter 5, let your light shine before men so that they could see your good works and glorify your fathers in heaven? And here he says, well, wait, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them. Well, I think one of the keys is, what's the motive? What's driving it? I like the song, I think Samantha sang it, where it's like, it's all about you, talking to God. And I think that's kind of the issue here. The key thing here is like, what's motivating us? What's driving us? What's making us do what we're doing? And why are we doing it? And where is that coming from? And that goes back to the whole thing of chapter 5 of, well, you know, is it when you say something, but, you know, like he says, look, if you curse your brother, you committed murder in your heart. If you did this, you did that, because it's about what's inside. Remember the time when Jesus is talking to the leaders, the Jewish leaders, and they're going, well, hey, your disciples eat without washing their hands. And they had this whole ceremonial washing thing they went through. And Jesus says, well, look, it's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. It's what comes out of your mouth Because that's from the heart. And that tells you what's in your heart, what comes out of the mouth. And so part of this whole process is, he says, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them. And I think the key here is that look, a couple things. Let's just go kind of through this first sentence or this first phrase. Look, the thing you're supposed to be aware about is practicing your righteousness in front of other people in order for them to see it. It's like, why are we doing this? It assumes you're going to be practicing something righteous. Like, remember, this is written, Jesus is speaking to his followers. He's not speaking to everybody in the whole world. It says, you know, there's a big crowd. He goes up the mountain. He starts speaking with his disciples, with his followers. So he's telling them, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people. He's assuming that you're going to be doing righteous things. He's assuming that you're going to be doing something to help somebody, doing something right, doing the correct things, doing things justly. He's assuming that. What he's questioning isn't that if you're going to do that or not. He says, if you're my follower, you're going to be doing this. But what he's questioning is, well, why are you doing that? What's going on? What's your motive? What's driving you? What is this, so everybody around you sees you and slaps you on the back and tells you what a great guy you are? And I like it because he says, if in order to be seen that by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. And so he gives an example. He says, thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. And it kind of goes back to that. Well, why are we doing this? So people can see you. And people go, wow, look how great you are. Hey, you just got your reward. That's why you were doing it? That was that? Good. Great. So he's saying, look, if you want God's blessing, you do. Now, does that mean no one will ever notice that you did anything? No, that's not what he's saying. But what he is saying, that what's the driving force? Because what you really want is probably what you'll end up getting. You want everybody to say how wonderful you are? Well, they may. That's good. Nothing wrong. I mean, and I don't think he's saying that that's anything that's, it's wrong that people think, wow, you're really a great guy. You're really a great woman. You're a great kid. You're a great whatever you are. But the issue is, if that's what you're doing it for, is to have somebody say that to you, and they said it, well, there you go. You got what you wanted. But if you want God to be blessing it, and you want God's blessing on it, then don't do it for that. Don't do it like that. I like this whole thing. So when you give to the needy, again, it's not, so he doesn't say, thus, if you give to the needy. No, thus, when you give to the needy. When you do this. Again, he's assuming that you're going to be doing this. Assuming that you, as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus Christ, are going to see, oh, wow, here's somebody in need. What can I do to help? How can I be helpful? What can I do? I was, I talked to several different people this week that had different ways of seeing. There's one person I talked to this morning. I was down someplace. I stopped for a minute on my way here and ran into somebody. They go, oh, they had just been on a missions trip to Uganda. And they were talking about a family they had visited. And they brought up Uganda, and I mentioned that a few years ago, one of the girls in here that happens to be in this room raised a bunch of money for nets, for mosquito nets. And that was totally a blessing. And she was, the girl I was talking to was all excited. Oh, yeah, that's really good. Cause, and then she told about a family where she went and visited them, and they went into the home, and the mother and the daughter had malaria. And they were like, she said the daughter was, you know, 2 or 3 years old, and the mother was sick, and they were both just sick, and to go to the doctor and get the treatments that really help. But she said, over there, when you go to the doctor, you have to pay up front, or they will not treat you. And she said, fortunately for them, the people who were there, they had enough money that they could pay. And for our standards, the amount of money involved is very low. But for their standards, it takes some money. And they're not going to treat you without it. And so a lot of people are just suffering. And then we were talking about how, well, the hospital, and I understand that, like, I could kind of see both sides of the equation, right? If, because everybody's so poor, if you just open the door, they'll flood it. You can't, then boom, nobody can get treated because you just took everything. Or you pay, make everybody, and you're kind of hard on it. Then you have to get this. Well, then you have people suffering that way too. So either way you go, the problem isn't that you're going to solve this and no one's going to suffer. The question is, what's the best way to do this? And we could all debate what's the best way to do this, but the goal is they're trying to help. And we were talking about it. We were saying, you know what? The chapel at Grossmont or her church or whatever church we're in, I don't think any of us are going to solve the problems of a whole country. This church, 100 and whatever people, isn't going to solve the problems of the United States, of California, La Mesa, or pretty much any subset that you would probably not solve all the problems in the Grossmont area. But we could do something. And we can do what we can do. And the issue isn't, well, I can't fix everything, so I won't fix anything. That doesn't seem like the right approach. Jesus is saying, look, when you give to the needy, we have people show up at church sometimes. A couple weeks ago, I got here a little on the early side. I was going to park in the bottom parking lot. So I was pulling there. There was a guy walking by with a, I think he had either a big backpack or he had a little cart he was pulling. And then he's right there in front of the driveway down below, right when I'm pulling in. So then I was going to come up here. Then I'm like, I'll just turn around. I'll go back there. So I pull down there, get my car parked, open the little chain up, walk up here. And when I get up here, he's sitting in the little shade structure over here, right in front of that, just out this door. So I went up and talked to him, and he was saying, yeah, man, he didn't have a place to sleep the night before, and he wanted some money, and he needed to he wanted some money for a hotel room. Basically, that we'd go longer, but that was basically the bottom line. So one of the things I tend to do here, and my experience over the years is I like to help people, but I don't really know the best way to do that. And so I go, hey, but he seemed like, you know, I go, hey, what if, I said, you know, this bank out here and this, there's a bunch of weeds. What if you pulled weeds for a couple hours and then I'll pay you and then you can go get a hotel room with that? He's like, oh, yeah, that sounds great. And then meanwhile, Sammy came out and he's like, oh, and we start talking. And then he starts pulling weeds. We got him a little garbage can. He starts pulling weeds and stuff. Then he goes to, we got him a little bite. There was some stuff over in the kitchen over there, so we got him a little bite. Something, a bagel and a little bit of orange juice or whatever was over there. And then he had that, and then he kept working. And then he came over to me, and he got to this yard over here, and he's like, oh, he comes into the office, and he goes, oh, Pastor, I don't know, you know, you don't have to pay me, but there's just like too many weeds in this one yard, and I don't think I'm going to be able to get them all. I go, whoa, 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 I didn't say you had to get every weed in the whole place. Just keep working for your time. And, you know, I said, look, every weed you pull is one weed that doesn't need to be pulled. So let's just go with that. Just get the next one. So he worked well and helped him out a little bit, you know. And he was really happy and he needed some shoes and Sammy helped him with that. But there's constantly things happening. Part of it's like, I'm always like, well, I don't know what to do because there's other parts of the Bible. If there's somebody that's needy, dude, we want to help them. I think for people who are, I know personally, if it's me, I would feel better about doing something, working, serving a little bit, and then you pay me for that. Then that's like, hey, I feel like that helps him maintain his dignity as much as just handing him some money when he could totally do that. And plus, we do get the benefit out of it. And all the way around, it just seems like a better setup to me. Part of the thing is, though, well, what can we do? What can, and I think that when we look at these things, I think that thus when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogue and in the streets. Now, we always think of, like, so it's not a big deal. We help people. And we don't need to do, hey, look what I did. Look at this, what we did here. Look what we did. I think there's a place for encouraging others and all that. There's a lot of different angles on this. But one of the things is, well, why are we doing this? To prove how great you are, how great I am, or to somehow glorify God. That's really our goal. And I like this, sound no trumpet before you as the hypocrites do. Now, I kind of think of, like, this is kind of cool. If you could, wouldn't you like it? Maybe you could just set up an app on your phone. I was thinking it'd be kind of nice to have a trumpeteer that walked around with you, you know, and whenever you're going to do something, they, like, gave a little trumpet fanfare. Okay, guys, something good is going to happen here. But really, you could probably get an app that you push a button on your phone and ba-boom, there comes the trumpet fanfare. Now we're ready to do something nice, right? Well, he said, don't do that. He says, as the hypocrites in the synagogues and in the streets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, the hypocrites, we just need to make it clear, because we kind of have in our mind what a hypocrite is. Hypocrite is not really a translated word. There's, every once in a while we run into these words in the Bible that are really just Greek words that they've just written them in English and they didn't really translate it. Because that word was really the Greek word that meant actor. And it's kind of interesting to me is if you think of the theater, and it's like an allusion to a theater, that when the principal actor would come onto the stage, when the principal hypocrite, because that's what an actor is, a hypocrite, and we've taken the secondary meaning and that becomes our primary meaning, right? That the hypocrite is an actor who's somebody who's pretending to be somebody they're not. That's what an actor does. That I remember seeing some interview with an actor or actress, and they were asking, I think it was an actress, and they were asking her about her political opinion about something. And I liked it because she goes, look, you know what? I've chosen as a career to pretend to be other people. And so I don't really want to give you an opinion on this. You know what I mean? It's like, that's not what I do. I pretend to be other people. So don't, like, who I pretend to be doesn't really have anything to do with who I really am. And part of it, so that's kind of what an actor does, right? They pretend to be something. Some people are really good at it. Some people aren't very good at it, but they pretend. Now, what we do here is we take that meaning and we apply it to people who aren't really actors. They're pretending to be something they're really not. And then that's the secondary meaning of hypocrite. The primary meaning is actor. But then we've taken the word and we turn it into this other meaning. And then, so he's saying, look, so if you kind of keep in mind that it's talking about, in his context, he's saying literally, sound no trumpet before you as the actors in the synagogues and in the streets. And he's taking this allusion to an actor who comes onto the stage and then they blow the trumpet because it's a play, right? Okay, here, this tells you, principal actor just came out onto the stage. Right? And so that tells you something. And then he's taking that image and he's applying it to the synagogue and then in the streets, like, oh, wait, now I'm kind of like the principal actor and look, let's blow a trumpet because I'm coming onto the stage, whether it's in the synagogue or on the street. But it's the whole illusion. Why? So that they may be praised by others. Because, okay, what happens at the theater? You blow the trumpet, the actor comes out, everybody cheers, woohoo! They're out here. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. Now, I think if you look at the context of Jesus' life, I got a couple little things. I want to show you why he would probably be familiar with this. Let's just take a minute and kind of look at one thing real quick. Okay, this is like the Sea of Galilee area where Jesus is from. Jesus lived in Nazareth. And this town right above him is a town called Sepphoris. And Sepphoris was actually more of a principal town in that area than Nazareth. Nazareth was a little village with maybe 300 people in it. So pretty small. And then Sepphoris was really a city in that area, which probably had 20 to 30,000 people in it. So it was kind of a major city. Now, there's a couple interesting things about this. Sepphoris was a major city that right before Jesus was born, not right before, but a few years before Jesus was born, they had rebelled against Herod and the whole city was destroyed. And so the city was basically leveled. And then right about the time Jesus was born, the new king that became king after Herod the Great, he decided to rebuild that city. So the city was rebuilt. Now, part of the reason Joseph and Mary and Jesus moved back to Nazareth is, oh, there's work there rebuilding the city. Now, the distance between Nazareth to Sepphoris is about 3 miles. So it's like a 3 mile. So they had a commute. You know, walking over there and back would take you, by the way we walk, it'd probably take you about an hour. By the way they walked, it'd probably take them 40 minutes. They were walkers and they could move over there. I don't know, carrying your tools or whatever, if you had a locker where you could put them over there. I'm not sure how that all worked. Now, one of the things about this is kind of interesting is that when they build these cities, and from being over there, one of the things you notice is everything's pretty much built out of rock, stone. And so when they talk about Joseph was a carpenter and Jesus was a carpenter, the word is really a Greek word called tekton, which is really kind of like technician or tech. We get the word technical or technician from there. And so really the word means like artisan or builder. So he probably, and most of the things were built with stone, so it's a good chance the word doesn't literally translate carpenter, it means builder. Which carpenter, I mean, they did have some wood and beams and stuff they did, so it could have been a carpenter. But he could have easily been a stone worker or some other kind of artisan like that. So they built that. One of the things that was in this city of Sepphoris was a big theater. And here's like a picture, a modern picture of it. And that's like a Crusader fort up at the top. But you can see where part of it's been reconstructed and refurbished. And then you can also see how it went all the way up the hill. So in this city, right next to Jesus' town, where Jesus probably as a young man and Joseph, his father, worked over there rebuilding, they had this big theater. And they would have these, that would be one of the things they do is put on plays and things. So when Jesus is referring to thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet for you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. It's interesting that if you kind of think about where Jesus came from, he's making an allusion to something that he's really familiar with, that he's basically grown up in this town, probably. There's nothing that says this in the Bible, but in a town of 300, and then there's a town of 20,000 that's being rebuilt during the time of this, and his dad is a builder, and he is a builder. It makes sense that he probably spent some time over there working. That's where that drew a lot of people, because there was work there, because they decided to rebuild the city. And that took years and years, but then this would have been the time Jesus was growing up. And in that time, there's this theater. And this would be one thing you would be familiar with and you'd know. And it's interesting that Jesus is the only one in the New Testament that uses this word that's hypocrite, or the word actor. He's the only one that refers to this and uses this word. And he's the one that came from this area where they had this thing. So anyhow, I thought that was kind of interesting. So then, but when you give to the needy, and again, not if you give to the needy, but when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And so the whole point is, if I do this, if I do what I'm doing, and I'm sounding a trumpet, I'm making a, hey, hey, look at me, and people go, wow, great job, fantastic, hey, you got your, that's what you wanted, you got it. But he said, no, just do it for the Lord. Do it for him. Do it to bring glory to his name and bring glory to who he is. And do it. And when he says, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good works, and then what? Glorify your Father who's in heaven. And that's kind of the, what's driving this? What is pushing this? What's making this happen? And kind of now I want to go back to the mushroom for a minute. Because I think that this all gets to everything Jesus has been saying in the whole Sermon on the Mount. It all boils down to what's inside of us. And what's in the heart? What is it that's driving us and making us be who we are? And this is where transformation takes place, is inside of us and in the heart. And it changes us from who we were to who we are. When you get to be my age, the years run together, okay? But I do believe last year we went to Vancouver. Marilyn's niece was married up in Washington, and Michael, my son, was having a conference up in Vancouver. We went up there. And we went to the Capilano Regional River Park in Vancouver, and it's really a pretty place. Here's a picture of one picture of it, and it's very much that whole northwestern, British Columbia, Washington, this rainforest, and it's just thick with trees, and it's just really a beautiful place. And there's a river, and there's a salmon ladder there where the salmon, you know, go up these things, and they've got it where you can, there's a window panes that are looking into the salmon ladder. So there's these salmon that are this big that are like from here to there, you know, just, and they're jumping up these steps right in front of you, which is pretty cool. And so we watched that. Then you go out, it's all misty and green, and it was just a beautiful place, right? And one of the things you see there are mushrooms. There's a lot of like mushrooms because of the humidity, because of the temperature, because of everything, you see a lot of mushrooms. And mushrooms are fungus or fungi. And to me, there's an interesting thing. Like, I like those. I don't know about eating those particular ones because, you know, that you have the love-hate relationship with us towards mushrooms and with mushrooms towards us. Like, we love some mushrooms and they're really good. And then some mushrooms are really great for eating. Some mushrooms, if you eat them, you die. So you, those are the ones that hate us. But they have this whole, one of the main things is in the ground, these mixed forests, or these forests, they have the trees. And then in the ground, there's fungus that's growing around the roots. And this is wherever there's woody type plants. So up there, because of the rain, you see, it's kind of obvious that the fungus is there. You see them on the outside of trees. You see these, you know, moss, lichens, fungus. Everything's damp, wet, grows, big, huge trees. It's beautiful. But even where we live, kind of in a chaparral-type area, there's fungus in the ground that make these plants grow. That are not necessarily make the plants grow. That might be the wrong way of putting it. They make it possible for plants to be what they are. There's a relationship between the fungus and the plants. And it's really in the ground. There's around the roots, there's a fungal community, let's call it that, that enables plants to absorb nutrients. So kind of have a little picture of this. So these fungus that are around the plants, the little red lines kind of represent the fungus. And that they grow around the roots. What they do is a couple things. One, the tip of the fungus will hit a tiny stone, like a grain of sand or something, and then it emits some kind of a liquid that dissolves the grain of sand, and thus it enables. And then this fiber is a little tube, and this allows the minerals to go travel up this tube and to be absorbed by the roots of the plant. And then they'll also, if there's any kind of organic material, like bugs or, you know, could be earthworm, it could be other type of fauna, we'll call it, right? Because that's little animals, dead things, carcasses, whatever it is that's there. They collect this nitrogen. Then that, from the dead body or the decaying whatever it is, they get nitrogen, and then that goes back up into the plants too. And it's through this exchange of this fungus. Here's more of like, instead of like a diagram, it's more of a electro microscope type picture. And so there, this fungal community creates this symbiotic relationship with the plant community. And this allows that. Now, what the fungus get is they get sugar from the plants. So the plants, like the trees, they, in their leaves, and or if it's a conifer in their the needles, they're having photosynthesis go on that's creating sugar from the carbon dioxide and water in the air. And then that sugar goes down into the roots, and then the fungus grow based on that sugar. By the way, all this is like things people are like, wow. If you look up what I heard about this, then I was doing some study on it. If you look up the Wood Wide Web, that's what it's called, www, Wood Wide Web, not World Wide Web, but Wood Wide Web. Sounds like you're Elmer Fudd saying the internet, you know. But anyhow, this is like this whole intricate network that's going on. And as I was thinking about this, I was thinking, wow, this is kind of like what this passage is talking about. Because you go to the forest, you go to whether it's our chaparral area, and it is kind of what it is, and it's got its own beauty, or you go to the rainforest in the Great Northwest, as they call it, and it has its type of beauty. But the thing that's making all that possible is what's underground and what you can't see. And, you know, sometimes you get a hold of something and you look at it and it looks great and you touch it and it's rotten and it just, your hand, you know, like goes right through it. Have you ever picked up I've picked up an orange before and had it like, oh, wait, the other side was completely covered with green moss. And it's like my hand just went into it. Or sometimes you look at something and you go, well, I don't know if that's that good, but you pick it up and it's solid. Or you touch this plant and you think, oh, this one's just going to come right out. And you start pulling and it won't come out because it's attached at the roots, because it's in there solid and it's not going anywhere. And what's making it happen, and some things, you keep cutting the top off and it just keeps growing back. And you cut it off and it comes back stronger than it was. Why? Because it's not about the top and it's not about what you see. It's about the roots and what's inside. And I believe that as a church, as individuals, so often, and I think this is what Jesus is saying, it's like what's below the surface, because that's where the true strength is, that's where the true rottenness is, that's where the true truth is. And sometimes you have a plant, you're like doing everything, it looks right, and the thing just won't grow. There's some kind of disease in this fungus or something. Then the plant, all of a sudden, like for no apparent reason, the plant is dying. But what's really going on is something's affecting it below the surface that you can't see. And sometimes a church, it'll be, look, everything looks really good on the surface, but what's going on here? Because there's something underneath the surface that you can't see. Or you go, wow, this shouldn't be doing this, but look at how it's taking off. It's because what really matters is what's below the surface. It really matters, like, what is it down here? And I think that's what Jesus is saying here. When he says, when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand's doing. Because it's what's inside. It's what's under the surface. It's what's unseen that really tells the truth of the matter. And it's so many things that we think, wow, it's this, it's this, it's this outward thing, it's that outward thing, it's what somebody thinks this looks like or that looks like. And that, and I think you could go to other parts of the Bible that it's there's such thing as consideration for others' feelings and all this. But what's the goal of why am I doing what I'm doing? Am I doing it because I want to glorify God? Or am I doing what I'm doing because I want to glorify me? And that really is what Jesus is saying here. Is this about how I am going to point people to Jesus? Or is this about how I'm going to show everybody how wonderful I am? That's kind of where he's going. And I have a couple of things here. So kind of thinking about this whole concept of helping other people and doing this. And I think one thing is, do what you can do. Like, I kind of mentioned this at the beginning. Could you solve every problem that exists in the world today? Probably not. They wouldn't be problems that existed in the world if you could solve them, because I know you're so wonderful, you would have solved them already. But you know, remember Jesus tells later on in Matthew, and he tells a very similar parable, in, I think, in Luke. And in one place he calls it the minas, one place he calls it the talents. And he talks about how he gave people one talent, two talents, and five talents. And then the master comes back and says, look, what'd you guys do with your talents? And the guy who had five, now he has 10. The guy who had two, now he has 4. The guy who has one, he said, look, I hid mine. I buried it. I didn't do anything with it. And and here's your talent back, because I was afraid of you. And I was scared. And that's the one that gets reprimanded and says, look, you could have at least put it in the bank and drawn interest. You could have done something. And he takes it away and gives it to the other. Now, when we use the word talent, we think of gifts and abilities that we have. The word talent that they're using there, kind of like the word hypocrite, kind of us has a, conjures up a certain image. But and talent was a quantity of money. It was a quantity of silver or gold, and it was a lot. For the average, like a minimum wage employee, so if you work minimum wage, it would be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. That would be compared to the scale. If you count, it's this much silver, and if you divide the silver out into what a day's labor wage was, it would be hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so a person that was a worker that was making a daily wage, if you were making a minimum wage, it's going to take you a long time to save $400,000, because you're going to spend almost all the money you have, if not more than what you have, just to get by, just to live. And to save that kind of money would take you, so both, basically most workers and laborer types would never possibly see this much money. A talent was a sum that a king would have, not a sum that a worker would have. And then when he says you give a talent, two talents, five talents, you're talking millions of dollars. It would be in the millions. So when they came and they used it or didn't use it, and then, but even if you think of, he says, look, you could have at least put it out to the bank and let them draw interest. Even there, I don't think gives the same thinking that we have. Because we think bank, very secure, FDIC insured. Like, hey, you put it in the bank and you're good. Split it up, even a couple $100,000, it's fine, you're covered, you're good. But the banks then, they didn't have that. So even putting it into a bank or putting it into to the money lenders to lend it out and get some interest, even that was a bit risky. And then the others, they took it and actually did some kind of investment business and grew it and doubled it, right? And so kind of where I'm going with this is do what you can do. In other words, whatever you're going to do, it involves some risk. It involves, look, I want to do something for God, and I want to ultimately do this for God in a way that's going to glorify Him. Well, okay, what can I do? I don't know. This is like where you start asking. Like, so, for some people, man, you know, God's blessed me financially. I can do this. Great. Some people, I don't have that resources financially, but I've got time. I've got this gift. I've got this skill. I've got something I can do. And I think a lot of times we get hung up that, well, there's one way to serve, or there's one thing to give, or there's one thing. But really, the bottom line is, which part of the microbial fungal community am I that's making it where things can function? And if you go to the forest and you're like, wow, this is just amazing. Well, you know what? Without those little threaded fungus down below the surface, it doesn't happen. And on the other hand, nobody sees it and nobody knows, and it just is doing what it does. And part of it is like, well, you know, if you're the little fungus there, well, I could never be a giant redwood, so what try? No, but the giant redwood can't be a giant redwood without you. And so part of it's like, look, do what you can do. And start asking God, what is the part that you have for me in your kingdom? And if I have a chance to do something good over here, some good deed, do well, prosper somebody, help somebody, what can I do? Let's do it. Let's just take the step. Let's help somebody. I think sometimes one of the things I've been praying about and thinking about, and we're going to have some opportunities, is to kind of get out of our neighborhood. One thing we want to do is, well, what can we do here in our neighborhood? Like, what can we do? We got a couple different ideas. We'll be announcing them as they take shape. One of the things, we're going to be trying to do some outreach in the community to try to meet people, greet people, help people. Mike and Michael and some of us have been talking. I've been talking to other leaders about, well, you probably noticed there's those little signs out there today. Well, one of the things we want to do is, you know, think about, well, how does this feel when somebody walks in who doesn't know where the bathroom is? I don't know if you've ever heard jokes about men not wanting to ask for directions. The reason they're funny is because they're true. So you walk here, and if you're not sure where the bathroom is, you know, and you're like, well, okay, where is it? And you know what? You don't a lot of people don't necessarily want to ask. So having a sign, hey, bathroom's that way, just settles the whole issue. If you've been here three times, you know where that, you should probably know where those things are. The children's classes are here, the elementary's here, the preschool's over here, all that kind of thing. Well, that's because that's something that's pretty easy for us to do. Let's just do it. What can we do to reach our neighbors here in these condos next door? We have Chris here from over there. We're thankful for him. And Mike comes to the Tuesday and Thursday. And if you've been to either of those, you know him. Other people, other neighbors. What can we do? How can we make ourselves seem more open and express to people that we care about them and we want them to know Jesus, because we know Jesus and we know that he loves us, and we know that because he loves us and he knows who we were and I know who I was and I know that he loves me, I'm sure he loves them too. Not only from my personal experience, but also from reading the Bible. Well, what can we do? Start praying about it. What can you do? What is it that God's put in front of you that may or may not be difficult, but that you have a chance to do this? Do it when you can do it. Like, do it when you can do it. Like, okay, what can you do? You can help somebody, but can you do it now? Why not? I understand sometimes you can't do things now because you have other commitments and nobody can do everything. But that still doesn't answer the question, what can you do and when can you do it? And everybody can do something now. And maybe that something is, not directly related to this, but it's something. And you're helping people and you're showing the love of Christ and you're being a blessing. I had a couple different people I talked to this week that I thought was kind of interesting. And I'll share a couple of these little. I was talking to my neighbor the other day. And I met
I was talking to this neighbor. He's tearing off his roof and redoing his roof. And then he was out in front of his house. And he had a little trailer, and he's got all this stuff, the junk, the old rotten roof material. And he's got his trailer full, and he's, like, covered head to toe in soot, basically. He's just completely filthy working on this. And so we start stop, and he's out there, and he's a friendly guy. I've met him before. His name's Mark. He's a really good guy. So we were talking, and we were walking around the block with Mary Lynn and Maria and Noah and myself. And Noah was on it. Somebody gave him a tricycle. So he's got his tricycle going around the block. And we stopped for a minute. And then after a couple minutes, Noah was not really totally engaged in the conversation. And he did have a tricycle, so he was kind of in a hurry to go. So Mary Lynn and Maria and Noah kept on going. And then I was standing there, and another person that lives in our neighborhood walks by with a dog. It was a woman. She starts talking. Everybody starts talking. And pretty soon, Mark is a pretty outspoken Christian. And he says something that the lady didn't really agree with, and then she says stuff that's like, oh, roll my eyes, and then he says something that's like, I probably wouldn't have gone there because this is like throwing gasoline on the fire, and then, you know, it was kind of this whole thing, and then I'm kind of like, I really agree with what Mark's saying, but he's kind of saying it in a way that wasn't real subtle, and it was not really... It was kind of just saying what he was saying, and she was saying what she was saying, and I'm kind of like, then I finally get a text, hey, we're home, what happened to you? And I'm like, oh, my mommy's calling, I need to go. But like, we said a couple things, you know, and the thing that struck me about the whole conversation was this person that we talked to, this neighbor, and her, like, they said a couple things, and I made a couple little mild comments, but I hadn't really thought of a good way to engage in it. And so when I got home, I'm thinking about this, and by the next day I had like four or five good things I could have said. But at the time, I wasn't really ready. And I was struck by the verse in Peter that says, you know, be ready to always give an answer for the hope that lies with you. And I didn't have something, you know, but on the other hand, it gave me an opportunity to kind of like think this through. And I was thinking about a person like that, like, well, how could we reach that person? What do you do? Because I'm not going to give up truth, but I also don't want to give up love. I don't want to give up, hey, this is what the Bible says, but then how can we, and you know what, the fact is the truth, and ultimately it's hard because it's true. But on the other hand, is there a way to present it? What could I do? How could I intervene, or what could I say in a situation like that would be more helpful, that would be more light than heat, let's just say. I mean, everybody has to make up their own decisions. The next day, I had taken a walk in the morning early. I was walking down to Starbucks. I walked down to the one over by, well, I guess I didn't walk there. I ended up over by the one by Baltimore and El Cajon, I think. And then I was talking, and then the person in front of me in line was like, oh, and they had like a moral dilemma that they were dealing with. Should I pay with cash? And kind of like they were in a situation where they were trying to hide some cash is what it really boiled down to. And then they kind of felt guilty. They said something to the barista. Then they looked to me and go, is this okay? Like, I'm the next one in line, right? So they looked to me. And I don't usually get people in line at a restaurant or Starbucks or coffee shop asking me if what they're doing is morally okay or not. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't usually get that question. So I wasn't really, I'm going, well, you know, and she kind of explained her situation a little bit. I'm like, well, I can see that's really hard. I don't have an easy answer for you. And it was more complicated than it was. It was a dilemma. It wasn't really super easy. And so then I go over to get some milk to put into my coffee, right? And then this lady, she's over there picking up her, so she starts talking to me, engaging some more, and then pretty soon, I said, well, you know, I'm a pastor. Well, where's your church? And they just moved down to this area, and I ended up giving her a card, talking to her. And so to me, here's a completely different individual. That this person is dealing with struggles of conscience and trying to figure out, and they're new, and they're looking for something, and they're looking for help. Well, I have a lot more experience slash feel like resources to help that person than the first person, right? Then the next day, I get a phone call from somebody who's like, well, it was a woman on the phone, and she's like, well, I'm looking for a home church. So then we started asking some questions and talking, explaining where we were and what this, and then she asked a few questions, and then really, this probably wasn't the church she was looking for whatever reason. And it was like, which is cool, like every church isn't for every person. Somebody once said to me, I've had a lot of people ask me, well, why are there so many churches? One guy said, you know, there's so many churches because there's so many kinds of people. The other question is, you know, why are there so many churches? How about a question back? Why are there so many restaurants? Why don't we just have one big restaurant and everybody in the whole country goes to that? And they put out a menu from Washington, D.C., and this is just what we eat on Monday, this is what we eat on Tuesday, this is what we eat. Well, why not? Why do we have, you go down the street, there's 15 different restaurants with all types of food and different qualities and prices and all kinds of stuff. Why? Well, why are there different types of churches? Well, because there's different people that, for whatever reason, it is what it is. I don't think it's anything to be... And so we talked and we discussed, and she was probably, the church she wanted probably... I told her, look, she's totally welcome to come and check it out and see, but it didn't sound like what she was looking for. But that's cool. And so, but part of it is, look, just do what you can do. Do what you can do. Do it when you can do it. And look, do it for the love of God. Like that, because really it boils down to, well, what can you do? When can you do it? And why are you doing it? And Jesus is saying, look, do your good works. He doesn't say, if you help poor people, if you help the needy, when you help the needy. And we're going to see, because next week we're going to talk about prayer and fasting. And he doesn't say if, he says when. And so the question is, what's driving us? What's the motive? What's pushing it? Why are we doing? And then I also think it goes to, what are we doing? Like, what can we do? One of the things that I'm kind of, among different things like outreach in our area, in our neighborhood, I also mean, some of the people who've been at the chapel for a long time might remember the Pepitos. They were friends of ours that were missionaries in Mexico. And so I talked to Jennifer, is the wife, I sent her a message, and she put me in contact with some people in TJ that do ministry with children there. So, hey, I'm setting up a outreach day to go to Mexico in probably November. We don't have the exact date set or anything yet, but we're working on that. Hey, you know what? Sometimes it's like, what can we do right here? I think it starts with, what can I do in my house? How can I represent Christ with my spouse, with my children, with my relatives, my parents, whoever's there in my four walls? How can I represent Christ here? Then what about my neighborhood? And for neighborhood, a lot of it's kind of virtual nowadays. It's like, okay, or, you know, it's the school. That's my, really, where my contacts, my work here. Sometimes it is our absolute, like, physical neighbors. A lot of, I talked to a guy the other day, and he was like, you know, I was at this community, and everybody in the evening was all out on their porches and talking, and it had a lot more individual local community. And when I was at this other area, none of that ever happened. And I said, you know what the difference is? Air conditioning. If you don't have it, in the evening when it cools off outside, you're out in front of your house. Or at least behind your house. You're somewhere outside. If you have it, you tend to stay inside. If you live in a neighborhood where everybody has an automatic garage door that leads to the kitchen, that the garage has a door to the kitchen that then's air conditioned, you might go weeks without seeing anybody. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing per se, but you're not going to have the local community the same as if everything's out and there's sun and the houses are all hot and everybody comes out in the front, then you develop relationships. It's just the way it is. So then the question is, well, if you do have this, but people still need human contact, well, how do we do what we could do to reach people under those circumstances? Because there's no circumstance that's beyond God. If you live in a community where, look, we don't really have air conditioning, we're all out in the front, we talk, hey, great opportunity. We live in a community where everybody's kind of in their little room because it's hot and they want to stay in where it's cool. Okay, well, what can we do? Start praying about it. Well, ask God, well, what can we do? Then when can we do it? How can we do it? What if you were to live within 20 minutes of an international border? Let's just say you live within 20 minutes to a half hour of an international border, and you could cross into a culture that's completely different, and it's, oh, wait, we do that, don't we? And it's right there, and we could do this, and we can see, we can learn more about the world. I always have thought going to Mexico is just like the greatest. I love it. I haven't done it much lately, but as I started kind of thinking through this whole thing, it's like, wow, well, what could we do? If for no other reason, it's so great to go because when you get home, your house looks really nice. It looks really nice. And there's really a lot of really good things that you're just totally taking for granted, that you're not thankful for, that when you see, oh, wait, how somebody else lives, it's like, I have it pretty nice. And I'm thankful for that. And God can use that in your life. When Vaughn and Heather were here, we talked to them about possibly going to Nepal next year. I don't know. Start praying about it. Start praying about it. We're seeing what we can do. We're trying to figure out how could this work and what are we doing and what would we have to do and how much would it cost and how could we get there. You know what? I think there's a very good chance that could happen. And I think start praying. Look, can you do that? I don't know if you can do that. What can you do? That's really the question is, well, what can you do? Let's create opportunities. Let's make it where we can be as hospitable to people as we possibly can, where we can show people the love of Christ, where we can serve God by serving other people from our heart. And because really what happens that really changes things is all in this fungal community, like what's below the surface. That's really where the true work gets done. And God really wants to use you and me to be part of that. How is that all going to work out? We're just going to keep looking and searching and praying and pushing and directing. But I do think that the first step is to say, Lord, here I am. What do you want? And start asking that question. And then you know what? God will, he'll start directing you. You start, all of a sudden you'll go, wow. All of a sudden you have three different people with three completely different life experiences that you run into in 2 days. They get you thinking, well, how could I do this? How could you do that? What goes on here? What goes on there? How could we do this? When could we do this? What could we do? God, we're going to go to you and see what you have for us. And then we're going to try to do that. We're going to, Lord, by your grace, through your strength, we're going to obey you. We're going to follow through. We're going to see where you lead us because we want to glorify you. We want to be the people that you want us to be. We want us to be the church you want us to be. We want us to influence our community in the way that you want us to. We want to influence the world in the best way that we can that'll bring glory to you. And that's our goal. I think when we start asking this question and start asking these questions, all of a sudden, God starts opening doors. And God's like, oh, you're kind of finally there, huh? I've been sitting here waiting. Okay, there's the door. And he'll open the door, and he'll provide. And we'll see God do great miracles in our lives and in our church and in other people's lives. And God's going to do something amazing.